The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Jordan hides behind the bed. His breathing grows silent as the figure enters the room. It lets out a slight hiss. In a playful tone, it asks,
"Jordan, where are you? We want you to join us."
Holding his trembling hands to his mouth, Jordan stays quiet. The feelings of fear and panic flood his body as he moves to the other corner of the room.
"You're here somewhere."
He takes a deep breath. A new feeling of bravery crawled over. He is tired of being the mouse instead of the cat. Jordan takes action. He slowly crawls to the other side of the room, picking up a piece of shattered glass. Peeking around the corner, he sees the figure near his previous hiding spot. Using the element of surprise, he creeps behind the figure, stabbing it in the side multiple times. The figure falls to the ground, flailing and screeching in pain. Taking advantage of the situation, he runs from the room into an empty hall. The walls display scratch marks and rolls of graffiti. The air is freezing. This hasn't been a room he has seen in the asylum before. Dismissing the confusion and conditions, he knew he had to focus on the one thing that mattered: staying alive. Between deep breaths, Jordan runs across the foyer, reaching a dead end in the hallway. A high-pitched shriek follows in his direction as the figure approaches him, black liquid spilling from its stomach where the glass lays. Jordan spots a lead pipe on the floor. He grips until his hands turn white, ready to fight. The figure casually strolls towards him, its arms straight together, and its gray, cracked legs drag across the floor. The figure stops 8 feet from Jordan as it unrolls its hand, extending its bony-like fingers, pointing to something behind him. It laughs maniacally.
"It's time for you to join them."
Behind him is a portrait. The portrait reveals a tall, slender man wearing a face mask and a white lab coat, holding a knife to Jordan's throat. The man's eyes covered in black. Dismissing the portrait, Jordan looks back at the figure to see the man in front of him. He is lifted off the ground by the man. His cold hands grip Jordan's throat, making him struggle to breathe. As the man's grip tightens, so does the life from Jordan's body. The man lets out a whisper, staring into Jordan's dying eyes. Jordan bolts upright from bed, breathing violently. He cradles in it, assuring himself everything is okay. The same dream has repeated itself ever since the asylum's journey. Jordan follows his morning routine. He gets out of bed, gets dressed, and adjusts the cast on his left arm, the one he nearly shattered jumping through the window. At last, ready for the day, he opens the door to see his father in front, startling him.
"Oh, Dad, you scared me."
His father looks at him, concerned. Noticing the shaken condition of his son, he asks,
"Jordan, are you okay? You look like a mess."
Jordan takes a sigh, fixing his hair.
"Yeah, just another nightmare."
"Are you still struggling with Matt and Jeff?"
Irritated by his father's question, he cultivates his voice.
"Yes, Dad. They were my best friends."
Jordan's dad attempts to assure him.
"Son, I know how you feel. I've lost friends in the past."
Jordan attempts to exit the room, but his dad blocks the exit, looking at his son.
Listen, I didn't come to check on you. I came to tell you the police want to see you.
Again?
Jordan's dad points his finger to the stair.
Yes, again. Now go, Jordan. She's in the kitchen. I don't want to repeat it.
Jordan descends to the kitchen at a slow pace, seeing a female officer sitting at the kitchen table with a cup of coffee. The officer has her red hair in a bun with brown eyes. She wears a firmly pressed, ironed uniform with a shiny badge, reading, Officer Price. A little intimidated by the unexpected visitor, he walks to the table, taking a seat across from her. The officer looks up, noticing Jordan. In an enthusiastic tone, she offers her hand.
Jordan Myers, it's nice to meet you. I'm Officer Ashley Price.
Not seeing any reaction from him, she lowers her hand down, allowing him to speak.
What do you guys want to ask me now? I keep telling you the same story, but you keep coming back.
Officer Price nods her head.
Yes, I've heard your story, but I think there's more to it. As you know, I'm following up on the disappearance of Jeffrey Higgins and Matthew Richardson. I'd like to hear your story again.
Clenching his fists, Jordan tells the story he has made up.
Jeff called me, saying he was going to the asylum with Matt. They never told me why or when. They invited me to come, but I never went with them.
She stares at him in a stern tone, stating,
Look, kid, I know there's something you're not telling me. Just because we couldn't find their phones or them inside the asylum doesn't mean you're telling me everything.
Matching Jordan's gaze, she replies,
Well, the officers and I looked at their phone records to see who they contacted before they disappeared. And the records show they called you. The question I have is, why did you call 911 an hour and a half after they told you they were leaving? Something made you do that.
Denying the officer's statement, Jordan rises from his seat, his voice now defensive.
Nothing like that happened. Jeff said to me in the call he would talk to me in about an hour. After that, an hour passed, I called you guys because it wasn't like him to miss calls. I may have overreacted, but I was right, wasn't I?
She raises an eyebrow at Jordan, replying to him in an expressive tone.
Kid, we're talking about two teenagers who have gone missing, not some breaking and entering charge. I need the truth.
I was at the asylum with them. I can't tell you what happened when the three of us were there. You wouldn't believe me. All I can say is go to the asylum and find the portraits. Just look for the portraits along the walls. You'll see them.
His voice becomes frantic.
It'll explain everything. You'll see things that you never thought existed. They're in the portraits. They're in the portraits.
A look of bewilderment crosses his face with a look of disgust. His heart drops, knowing she didn't believe him.
I know it sounds crazy, but what I saw can't be explained. You gotta believe me. Go there, to Meadowbrook Asylum. Find the portraits, I'm telling you they're there.
Before Jordan can say anything else, his father enters the room, staring at Officer Price. His eyes narrowed at her.
Don't you have someplace to be, officer? I thought this was supposed to be a follow-up, not an interrogation.
She turns her attention to the dad.
Sorry, sir. We were just finishing up.
Officer Price places her card on the table with a piece of writing on it before exiting the house. Jordan's father kneels beside him, placing his hand on Jordan's shoulder.
Calm down, son. You all right?
Jordan gives a slight nod.
I'm okay, Dad. It just got to my head. Can I have some alone time, please?
He replies by giving him a loving hug. After his dad leaves the room, Jordan turns his attention to the piece of writing on the officer's card, reading it to himself.
Jordan, what you said about the asylum, I believe there is something more to that place. Something wrong. That place, there's something more to it than we know. Stay away from it.
His jaw drops. Did he make a mistake revealing he was inside the asylum? With fearful thoughts filling his mind, he exits the chair and goes to the living room couch. Again, He reads the note, petrified of its contents. More questions than answers filled his mind. He takes a look at the note one more time, nearly going into a panic attack. Back at the police station, Officer Price sits at her desk, staring at the computer screen, wondering more about the asylum. She looks at the story given to the public about how it was destroyed. The public article shows a black and white photo of Meadowbrook Asylum on fire. The article tells of a short circuit explosion that started in the boiler room, causing an explosion that nearly destroyed the entire asylum. Noticing the article said nothing about a safety issue, she looked up all of the inspections done on the asylum in 1978. Upon examination, the asylum had never failed an inspection in all of its existence. This new information piqued her curiosity. How could the circuits create such a mess if they passed the examination? The people who did the inspections wouldn't mark the asylum safe if there was a risk. Taking a deep breath, she stares deeply at the computer, not knowing what to make of this new information. She follows the question and only leads in her head. What did Jordan mean about the portraits? She exits the police station, getting into her car, driving off to the asylum to figure out the truth behind it. Now at Meadowbrook Asylum, the feeling of goosebumps creep inside her. Even in the daylight, it looked scary. You could see the scarred letters of the name Meadowbrook above the entrance. The windows are covered in wood, but not all spaces of the windows are filled. Across every window, there is a small line of light coming from inside. A line just small enough to where a person could watch you without anyone noticing. Officer Price couldn't get that thought out of her mind. She circles to the back of the asylum, looking at the door that Jeff opened. Officer Price approaches the back door, picking the lock. As it opens, the door creates a loud, shattering creak, similar to a human scream. She enters, closing the door behind her. A feeling of torment and disgust fills the air around her. Even with the sunlight coming in from the cracked windows, the asylum was still very dark. She pulls out her flashlight, revealing the room to have splintered walls filled with stained burn marks, patches of loose paint, and holes fill the floor. A brief examination of the room shows nothing of interest. Her perception of interest was now at an all-time high as she descended further into the asylum. She takes in the environment of the asylum. Everything seems reasonable until a slight creak from the floorboards gets her attention. The feeling of being watched that passed through her before was now back. She shines the flashlight on the wall where the sound came from to reveal an eye-sized hole in the wall. Curiously, Officer Price looks through to see what's on the other side of the wall. Inside is a picture of some kind. Before she could examine it further, a loud thud from the other side of the hall startles her. Immediately, she draws her gun, ready for anything or anyone else to be in the asylum. With the gun in one hand and the flashlight in the other, she follows the location of the sound. Falling bits of dirt come from above, gracing her face. She hears scratches and footsteps above, too loud to be any vermin. Putting away her gun, she reaches for her radio.
Dispatch, this is Officer Ashley Price. I'm at the Meadowbrook Asylum. I'm calling for immediate backup.
Static fills the air.
Dispatch, this is Officer Price requesting immediate backup.
A man's laugh echoes from the other end of the radio. In an eerie tone, the man says,
You just got here. Why would you want to leave?
She stares blankly at the radio. Sweat starts to slide down the back of her neck.
If this is someone joking around, it's not funny.
A slithery voice replies.
My dear, this is no joke. You won't be talking to anyone else but me.
A slight pause ensues, making Officer Price start to regret her decision to come to the asylum. Replying with more resistance in her voice, she blasts out.
You better knock this off. I am a police officer. I will arrest you if you keep talking like that.
The man lets out a sinister laugh, whispering into the radio.
Do you think you can arrest me? You've had my attention from the moment you entered here. Tell me, what are you trying to find?
She yells back.
I'm trying to find the two missing boys, so would you mind helping me out?
The man's voice over the radio plagues the room.
I don't want to help. In fact, I'm watching your every move.
She calls his bluff.
Really? What am I doing right now?
The man replies in a loose tone.
Holding a gun at a dirty broken wall inside my asylum.
She runs, making her way back to the door. This was enough for one day. She put her hand around the handle to the door, pulling with all her weight. The door stays in place, jammed. Her flashlight begins to go dim, and the sunlight outside starts to fade to black. The man, in his sinister voice, whispers through the radio.
I want you to know something. There's no way to leave this place. You sealed your fate.
Suddenly, the light from the outside sky shines into the asylum, and her flashlight works again. Only this time, she is in an endless hall with no doors. The room around her is encircled by portraits of people dying and in torment. It's like she teleported from one place to another. One of the portraits shows a man picking at his arm with a scalpel. Blood soaks the floor, with chunks of muscle and skin splattered across the floor. Another portrait shows a man injecting a drill into his head, having the expression of laughing, as tears of blood form down his face. Officer Price picks up the radio with trembling hands, trying to hide the fear in her voice.
What do you want?
To see what your insides look like.
A short pause fills the room before the man replies in a low tone. She drops the radio, breaking it, her body trembling at the words of the man. She gets her gun and flashlight stance back, making her way slowly through the hall, searching every corner of every room. Eventually, she reaches a staircase leading down. Conflict soars through her head if she should take the stairs or not. In all likelihood, an exit wasn't down there, but her only exit was gone now. She descends the stairs, still holding the gun to her body. At the bottom, a room with lights, ruined tiles, and torn paintings fill her vision. Her thoughts are interrupted by a dragging sound coming from the other side of the room. Spotting a tilted desk, she takes cover behind it. The sound was just now a few feet from her. Slowly, she peeks her head out, seeing one of the figures. She gets the extreme urge to vomit from the sight and smell of it. The figure looks to be 7 feet tall. Its gray skin reflects off the light. Bones and limbs protrude from its stomach and arms. Its eyes look like they were taken off a doll and glued on. It lifts its head in the air, making a wheezing, snorting noise, letting out an unsettling growl. It says deeply,
"What brings you here? Do you wish to see our headmaster?"
She stays quiet, holding her position as the figure gets closer and closer.
Come out, wherever you are,"
it says in a childish tone. Officer Price grips the gun as hard as she can and, in a quick motion, rises to her feet, shooting the deformed figure. She fires 4 bullets, 2 missing, but the other 2 hit their target in the stomach and leg. A silver substance leaks from its wounds, forcing the creature to let out an abnormal scream, which wasn't human. Ashley runs from the figure, hearing it pursue behind her. The speed of it outmatched hers, and she knew it. Knowing it would catch her at any moment, she finds the nearest door, closing it. Seconds later, it stops in front of the door, clapping its hands in victorious rhythm. It murmurs,
"Say hello to the headmaster for me."
Before she could move, a hand reached over her shoulder, covering her mouth. She tried to resist, but the man had complete control over her. She hears the voice of the man from the radio behind her.
I'm glad we can finally talk face to face.
Fear takes over her, recognizing the voice to be the man from the radio. Officer Bryce tries to get loose from the man's grip, but he is too strong.
Let me go! Let me go!
Now, I can't do that. But now I have seen you, it's time you see me. Beware. The sight isn't a pretty one.
He turns the officer around, revealing a scar across his face. The man wears a white lab coat covered with bloodstains. His hair is colored gray, with eyes faded so black it looks to be an endless tunnel. Burn scars cover the left side of his face. His lips were crisp and chapped. In a calm voice, he says,
"You have entered my realm. Don't fight it. There's no way out. After all, you're mine now."
She tries to muffle through his hand.
"What do you want from me?"
Ignoring her, he drags Officer Price into a room lit with candles displaying multiple figures formed into a circle. They gather together at the sight of the man, aligned in a pattern waiting for an order. The man snaps his fingers together, releasing the grip around her. Two figures grab her arms. The grip was so secure she couldn't move. He stands beside her, whispering,
"The thing I wanted before, I'm going to have it now."
Tears fill Ashley's eyes.
"What?"
He looks to the table on the left, seeing a hammer and picking it up from the table. He approaches Officer Price slowly, hellacious intent displayed over his face.
"What are you going to do with that? No! No!"
He ignores her pleas, hitting her kneecaps with the hammer. Snaps of broken bones fill the room, causing the figure to look away in disgust. Officer Price screams in agony, tears and sweat running down her face as she cried. The man puts his hand to his ear. A beautiful smile forms across his face as he cries in joy.
"Music to my ears! Oh, such beautiful sounds! Scream again! Scream! Let it all out!"
Another strike comes from the hammer, this time hitting her ribs. She lets out a loud cough. Blood falls from her mouth, and she goes unconscious from the pain. Humming out loud, the man says,
"It's been some time since I've seen blood. Oh, such precious blood. I want to see more. I want to see yours."
The man walks over to the other side of the room, searching through a cabinet. One of the figures holding her speaks.
"Will the painter know about this?"
The man puts a finger across his lips, hushing them.
"I'm sure he already knows, but please, let's not talk about that. I want to enjoy this moment. It's been a while since I had Dr. Sebastian Langstrom's kill somebody, and I want to make my return so, so beautiful."
He approaches her one more time, holding a bone saw, scalpel, needle, and multiple tourniquets from the cabinet, putting on a surgical mask. He injects an adrenaline shot into Officer Price, her eyes slowly opening back up. Signaling for the figures to leave, they drop her to the ground, while an evil smirk forms across the man's chapped lips. Holding her face, he strokes her hair slowly, inserting the knife slowly into her chest. He chuckles to himself, watching the blood protrude from the wound. He stares at her with that evil grin, smiling as he says,
"Now, let's see what your insides look like."
Jordan awakens from his nap, surprised to see an empty house. It catches him off guard when he sees a note and a mailed envelope on the kitchen island. Approaching the note, he picks it up, reading it out loud.
"Jordan, it's your father. I went to see Uncle Charles for the night. There is cooked chicken in the fridge, and there's an envelope for you. If there are any problems, or if you need me, you know my number.
Putting down the paper, Jordan turns his attention to the envelope. He sees it has no return address and is unmarked, making him hesitant to open it. But he decides to read it again after some thinking. Upon opening the envelope, a scroll slides outspread across the table.
Mr. Myers, you have awoken something you cannot control. The events that transpired at the asylum have begun something you cannot comprehend. I could tell you to stay away from the asylum, but I know you have observed the portraits. We have to speak before people start noticing and become involved. There's only one place where we can meet without having to bother about the portraits. You must arrive at the asylum and wait on the first floor. I am not forcing you here. However, this will be your single opportunity to fix the problem you helped generate. I will be at the asylum tonight, on the first floor, at 8 p.m. Come or not, it's your choice. If you do, I will provide you with all the answers.
Jordan's hands tremble. How did this person know he was in the asylum? What were these events? What is so important about the portraits? There were so many questions he wanted to ask. He thinks to himself,
did this all happen because Jeff ruined a picture?
Pacing around the kitchen, he thinks of what he could do. Going to the asylum would give him a chance to meet the stranger and get some answers. But going to the asylum again could kill him. Was this man telling the truth? Knowing this is his only chance to avenge his friends, Jordan exits the house to go to the asylum. He exits the door, not knowing what to expect. Knowing there were things beyond his understanding, he had no way to prepare what this man was talking about. Could it have been some sick joke, or was this man telling the truth? He knew there could only be one way, and that was going to the asylum. After 20 minutes of walking, he studies the Meadowbrook Asylum's front of the building, where it all started. He was never afraid of it in the past. Now, the mere sight of it made him have a near panic attack. He sees the broken window on the second floor. The memory of the jump forms in his mind. He disregards it, going through the courtyard. He listens to the crunching of the gravel under his feet. He goes to the back of the asylum, remembering where the door is. After walking around the building, the door is visible. The padlock, used to hold the door the first time, is still on the ground. Jordan kicks it away, not wanting to remember what happened after entering the first time. Mustering a bundle of courage, he opens the door. A pile of dust and grime come from the top of it, dropping onto him, causing him to cough multiple times. In the asylum, a dimly lit room stands ahead of him at the end of the hall. He follows the light, entering the room. The surroundings of the room made him feel somewhat at peace. Two lounge chairs sit across from each other. A new patch of floor replaced the previously crushed tiles on the floor. The formerly stained burnt walls were no more. Fresh ones had replaced them. He stood in awe before hearing a man clear his voice at the other end of the room. A small man with a black suit and gray glasses blocking his eyes signals Jordan's attention. He is a very skinny, frail-looking man, appearing to be in his late 70s. He has no hair except for a trimmed gray beard. The man points to the chair, signaling for Jordan to take a seat. The two take a seat from each other, resting his arms on the cushion, staying quiet, creating an uncomfortable atmosphere. Speaking with open-hearted determination in his voice, Jordan asks,
"Are you the one that sent me the letter?"
Responding to the question, the man takes off his glasses, showing pale, white eyes. In a leisurely gesture, he nods yes.
"Why did you send it?"
The man raises a hand, pointing to Jordan. In a low, crisp tone, he replies,
"You destroyed a portrait."
Jordan narrows his eyes angrily.
"A portrait? My friends are dead because of a portrait.
Jordan could barely contain himself.
Jeff destroyed it, not me. Besides, how could you tell I was here?
The man points to two figures, signaling they are the ones. A shriek of terror from Jordan fills the room as two figures come from both sides of the room. He attempts to run from them, but one of their hands rests on his shoulder, keeping him pinned to the chair, no matter how hard he tries to resist.
Get this thing off me.
The figure calmly speaks.
We don't want to hurt you.
The stranger clears his throat, his voice no longer crisp. He whispers to Jordan in a faint tone.
These abominations, or as you call them, figures, listen to me. If you cooperate and listen, this will be much easier. You're probably wondering what they are. Well, they are the results of events I've tried long and hard to forget. But your friend made a grave mistake. He destroyed a portrait, and by doing that, he awakened them and their creator.
Jordan punches the chair, visibly angry.
What are you talking about? This makes no sense. You said you would give me the answers to what was going on in the scroll. Not the story of what these things are. Tell me what is going on.
The man lets out a chuckle at him, with minor coughs in between. Putting his hand across his face, the man speaks.
These days, young people have no patience. In time, you'll know everything. But let me introduce myself. My name is Jacob Wilson. I used to work here at Meadowbrook Asylum before the fire. I was good friends with the asylum's head director, Sebastian Langstrom, the abomination's creator, or, as the figures call him, the headmaster. The abominations also know me as the painter.
One of the figures speaks up, their voice shaken.
The headmaster and the painter made all of us before the explosion happened.
Jordan remains silent, with keen interest in what Jacob has to say.
The story of an electrical fire is a lie. That isn't what caused the explosion. Sebastian himself caused it. You've probably seen him in the portraits of the nightmares you have. If you have nightmares, he'll be the man with the lab coat.
Jordan looks back at Jacob in confusion, questioning the statements of his nightmare.
You have the nightmares too?
Jordan, I've had the nightmares ever since the destruction of the asylum and the ending of mine and Sebastian's fun.
Jordan tilts his head in confusion.
What fun is that?
Jacob squeezes his hand against the leather of the chair, giving the signal of a touchy subject.
Sebastian and I tortured people. We'd inflict pain onto people by doing monstrous things to them they would never do to themselves. The pain caused by us would form a look on their face, a face of pain that is near death.
Jordan looks at Jacob in the eye.
You're a sick bastard who deserves the nightmares.
Jacob gives a nod of acknowledgement with hesitance in his voice.
Maybe we were sick. We selected patients in the asylum who had no family, friends, or emergency contacts. Sebastian brought them to a hidden room in his office. There he tortured them while I drew portraits of their deathly tortures. It was golden. The joy we felt was unbelievable.
So why did you and your friend stop doing this so-called fun?
Jacob's eyes start to water.
As they say, all good things must come to an end. And Sebastian wanted to end with a bang, literally. One of the patients was able to escape and alert the police of our activities.
So we told the police, and they came to the asylum to get you and Sebastian?
Jacob nods in response.
I'd already left the asylum. I knew everything was finished, yet Sebastian couldn't let it go. He blew up the boiler room, killing himself and everyone in the asylum.
Jordan puts his hands to his chin, confused.
How does this have anything to do with me?
Well, the destruction of the portrait revived Sebastian, bringing his attention back to the real world. Enraged by this, he's brought the victim's spirits from the explosion with him into this world, creating the figures. His bloodlust has returned. He killed a female police officer not too long ago, and this is only the beginning. If anyone enters this place, he will kill them. Sebastian's spirit has been awoken. You're the only one that can stop him and this from happening.
What do you mean to stop this? You mean Sebastian and these figures or whatever they are?
Jacob snaps his fingers.
Precisely. Right now, Sebastian's in purgatory, or as I call it, the portrait world. Every person who died from the boiler room explosion or by Sebastian and I are bound to the portraits. Their spirits can't leave them. As a result, they reside in a limbo-like afterlife, only accessible through a portrait.
Jordan cries out in panic.
Wait, you mean the afterlife as in people being dead? So if I'm alive, how can I get into the asylum?
You need to be in the portrait world. So I'm gonna make a portrait of you.
Jordan's face goes pale.
Hold on. You told me anyone you paint their spirit is bound to that portrait. So why do you want to put me there?
Jacob rises from the chair, walking to one of the corners of the room. Reaching into a bag, he takes out an easel and a piece of paper.
They were bound because Sebastian tortured them until they died. When they died, the portrait showed their last moments alive. That is where their souls would go as a result. And since you're not in any pain, you'll be free to do whatever you want in there.
Jordan, outraged by this news, tries to rise from the chair. The figure again holds him steady in the chair, refusing to let him escape. Jacob yells out loud.
This is your only chance to avenge your friends.
This strikes Jordan in the heart, making him nod in response.
Do it. Draw a portrait of me.
Jacob takes out his paintbrush and paint from the bag, rubbing his hand against it with a disturbing smile.
My, it's been 41 years since I've used these. I'm gonna paint you now. Don't move. When I'm done with the painting, you'll awaken in the portrait world. Once there, you'll have to find the boiler room and make it explode. Only then can Sebastian be destroyed.
Tears of sweat and fear start to run down Jordan's face. With all of his might, he asks,
"What will happen when it explodes?"
Painting the portrait, Jacob answers with determination,
"Every spirit inside the purgatory will die, including your friend. The explosion will destroy all the portraits, freeing the bounded soul. But don't worry, since your portrait isn't in pain, you'll be able to keep your soul and body. You'll not become a figure."
My friend is still alive?
Yes, for now. Look for him if you must, but remember, destroying the asylum is your priority. As long as that place still exists, Sebastian can create figures and kill people here without a problem.
Jacob gives a quiet signal to the room. 30 minutes pass, and the painting is almost complete.
Right. In a couple of minutes, I'll be done painting you. After I paint you, you'll enter the portrait world. You'll know when you're there. Your arm will no longer be broken, and you'll not feel pain. You'll awaken in the asylum disguised as a patient. No one will know the difference.
This time, confidence comes from Jordan's voice.
I go into the portrait world, find the boiler room, blow it up, and everyone is free? It sounds easy enough, but what happens if something goes wrong?
Oh, I can't help you there. Oh, one more thing. Don't let Sebastian see you or find you. He knows you're coming. You'll recognize him as the man in a white lab coat, with the deep red eyes. But I'm sure he's already glued into your memory.
With the portrait finished, Jordan tries to keep his eyes open, but they become blurry and shaky until his eyes close. The world becomes silent and dark around him. He awakens inside the asylum, lying on a hospital bed, dressed in a hospital gown. Just like Jacob said, his arm is no longer broken. Looking around, he is amazed at the asylum's look. The walls are painted white, and the floors spotless, Phones are heard ringing in the distance, and the doctors roam the halls. Jordan was now in the portrait world.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.